Would you know how to get rid of your fear, phobia, stress, or anxiety? How to burst your fear and transform your life? Welcome to Fear Busters Show, presented by Lauren Rosenberg, fear and phobia relief expert and author of How to Move Forward When the Unthinkable Happens. You are listening to UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio with Lauren Rosenberg. www.fear-busters.com.
And welcome back to Fear Buster. Today we're going to talk about fear, but we have a special guest, hypnotherapist Sharon. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Thank you
so much for sharing some of the fear and then explaining how hypnotherapy work and how it can help. So talking about fear, what fear? You mentioned fear of dogs. How did that come along? And
this is the interesting thing about some fears. From my understanding, they sometimes have no place of original trauma. Even I never had an original trauma, but for dogs, I'd never been bitten. I'd never really known a dog.
So my brother on the, dogs, I mean, from what I, you know, dealing with fear, what I always find is sometimes it has nothing to do with the actual dog.
Sometimes it can be
completely something different. Sometimes, especially dogs, it's like the unknown. I don't know which way is the dog going to go, what's going to happen. And sometimes you don't have to have a trauma about a dog in order to have a dog. Or you can copy behavior. You can even, if you've seen somebody behaving like this, you can start having that fear without even having done anything, in that sense.
Right. I mean, as I was going to say, my brother, you know, same household, absolutely loved dogs, couldn't get enough of them, wanted one. And so Freud actually says a fear of dogs is fear of the father.
Authorities.
So, you know, yeah. I mean, as a young child, that can be, you know, that's quite a possibility.
It's funny that I didn't know that he said that, but very often when a child does bedwetting, it's a fear for a parent, and very much not all the cases, but it's connected to father. So it's quite interesting that
as all issues, blame it on the parents. Poor parents. I mean,
I know. If we will learn, and as parents is like 24 hours, 7 days a week. So, and it's and it's not even a paid job. So, but it's the most beautiful job. We wouldn't want it any other way. So, that fear of dogs. So your brother wanted a dog.
Oh yeah. So in a household of a child who absolutely adored them, and I was terrified, and it wasn't a terror that went on for years and years and years, right up into my adulthood.
So what were those symptoms? How do you know?
Quite happily run across a road that we had traffic going, and I would run across the road to be on the other side or away from that dog, not caring for my life. And that would be perfectly reasonable in my behavior,
because the
other thing that as a growing woman, as growing older, I started traveling in my teens, and the idea of being in a country that potentially had roaming dogs around was a potential worry for me. And that would be, you know, I mean, I've traveled to India, and I traveled to Bali, and I traveled to all places where they had roaming dogs around them. And I remember, and that was at the age of 21. So I was still nervous and worried at that age. So, yeah.
It's not, it takes some part of your freedom away if you have to plan in advance and think, okay, where am I going to go? Is there going to be a dog? Do I want to go there? Do I not want to go there?
Absolutely. This would be including families, friends, anyone that owned a dog would have to lock their dog in another room. It's uncomfortable for them in their life. It's a family, part of their, that they consider it part of their family. And in my life, it was like, what on earth are you doing? You know, why would you have a strange creature in your house that is not human? And it just didn't compute to me. So going into somebody's house, or if I heard a bark, on the other side of a door that I was going to go to. That was it. There was no way you were going to get me in that home. Yeah. So yeah, it was really quite a profound.
You remind me of a lady that I saw, and she literally left her pram was a baby in the middle of the road because she saw a dog. That how bad it was. It's just like, yeah, the subconscious mind say, okay, I've got to get out of this, and it doesn't matter if I put myself in danger. This is just
or anyone worse else in danger. Yeah, yeah. It's incredible. It's that kind of drag somebody else into it, and they're like, whoa, I'm okay. But yeah, so. But that's not why I got into hypnotherapy, I have to say. it had nothing to do with it, in fact. But that was, I think, in terms of fears and phobias I would call that. When I work with a client, I have a real understanding of not only how a phobia feels, per se, in that kind of desperation, but also once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah, it is completely gone.
And it's not something you can find again.
No, it's true. It's true because this is one of the reasons when I see my clients, I always do a form and ask them questions and they write it down, because once the fear is gone, they're going to say at the end of the session, after seeing them, they say, no, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad. No, it wasn't that bad. You just left a baby in the pram in the middle of the road. No, really? Or you tried to jump over and there's a cliff and there was nothing to hold on to. But no, it wasn't that bad. And you're right. Yeah. But that is when it's no longer in the subconscious mind, that it's not part of them anymore. And it's just like, exactly. I don't need to keep it. So why should I even remember about it? So that's the reason. That's the only one of the reason why I asked them to fill a form beforehand. So I can just say, okay, well, actually it was.
I have to say, Lauren, I'm proud to say, or honored to say, that I'm the first female in history to do surgery on a dog without anesthetic.
I'm going to stop you there, but any listeners, please go on YouTube and watch that video, because this is fascinating, amazing, to actually hypnotize a dog, and the dog has an operation, and the way the dog wakes up, and it is just fascinating. Please just do.
Well, it's a pretty unique thing. I mean, there has been another gentleman in Spain, Dr. Escudero, who's done a smaller operation on a dog without anesthetic before, some years ago. But this was the first time to do an hour and a half. It was a stomach operation, so it was a huge thing. But during that, the reason why I bring it up is during that moment, while I'm extremely close to this dog, and I'm bending down and stroking him and whispering into his ear, keeping the dog calm, using touch, energy, whatever, and I thought to myself for a moment, I said, Sharon, you had such a fear, can you bring it up again? And I wanted to test if I could actually bring up my phobia again in that moment, because it was such an intensive moment with this creature. And I thought, this is an interesting opportunity. I do like a little test. I like an experiment here and there. And so I thought, I want to see if I can bring up this phobia and see if I can actually reignite it, because it has absolutely disappeared. And then it was such a wonderful moment in my subconscious and my conscious mind joined together and said, don't do that. And I thought, yes, I'm actually doing a job here. Yeah, and I've got a different task at
hand. Operation. And,
I mean, in the middle of, it was actually a hernia operation, in the middle of a hernia operation. But the subconscious always does its best to try and keep us safe, even though there may be misunderstandings. And that's the problem with the subconscious. Yeah. It's a wonderful tool, but it has these misunderstandings that we often take action on. And at that moment, my conscious and subconscious mind absolutely came together in full glory and said, don't go there.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, that's brave. You're hypnotizing that dog. He's having an operation. There's a surgeon, everybody there. And everybody's watching you too. And it's being filmed. Maybe that's not the best time to think of that.
But the interesting part of it is that the thought came up. you know, and I want, you know, to me, these kind of moments, they kind of give me a sort of a jolt into the reality of our minds. You know, this is something, it was so evident that I had something in my being that had such an intensive fear for 20 plus years.
I was going to say the time, because it's part of it's a long time. So it's really, it was part of your life, and yeah, taking that away was a big uplifting and freedom. That's for sure. So
my way of getting over my fear of dogs are quite, you know, will actually freak most dog phobics out. And they'll be like, I wouldn't do that. No, nor would I. And I don't know why or how. And again, I say this in with all love and respect to the subconscious, it tries to keep us safe. And I think at some point when you're ready for change, you're absolutely ready for change. I had a flatmate at college whose parents had a dog, and we had to look after it. We had to bring it to the house because for some reason their parents couldn't look after it. Now this dog was really mild natured, lovely, but for some reason I accepted that we could have this creature. Now I still was phobic. I still was not keen on the whole thing, but so I didn't give it walks. I didn't pet it, but I had the allowance that it was in the home with us, because it really was a very mellow, chill dog. And she was old. She was incredibly old.
I think the first step is, once you have the intention, once you actually put the intention to it,
absolutely,
you change the energy. You're actually, once the first step was, okay, I accept that dog can be in my part of my living arrangement, that's like in my life. And then once you put the intention to it, that's the next step.
Yeah, exactly. And I think in, you know, one of the things that I teach, the intention of change is the key to change. Mm-hmm. So that was the first step, having the dog in the house. And then the next step was the veterinary school that this dog was under when, you know, she was an old dog said, you really need to get a puppy to get her uplifted because she needs to have another dog. So at that point, my flatmate decided to get this tiny puppy. It had to be smaller than the dog that we had. Apparently you need to do it in hierarchy. Yes, so he got this really tiny puppy, and she was cute. She looked a little bit like an Ewok, and she's just beautiful little creature. But again, I wasn't wholly keen on the whole process. But
puppy is even worse, because puppies are moving a lot, biting, play by.
Well, you'd think, but this one didn't do anything. She apparently had a heart condition. And she was, all she would do would stand at the bed of this older dog, this older dog, and she would just do a little kind of puff, which was her bark. She hardly had a bark on her, and just irritate the older dog to get off her own bed, and so the little puppy would go into her bed, and that was it. So she was almost like this kind of annoyance to this older dog, and the dog would abide by the little puppy. And then another extraordinary thing happened. I was at a particular job where I was working in the film industry, and one of the producers' wives said, phone me up. Why she phoned me, I have no clue. She said, Sharon, you have to take my puppies. My dog's had puppies, and you've got to take one. And I was like, what are you talking about? I don't want a dog. This is the last thing. And I said to my flatmate at the time, somebody's told me I have to take a puppy. And he said, oh yes, we do need another one to cheer up the little dog that's having a problem with the bigger dog. And I said, are you kidding? And he said, no, let's go and see it. So he came with me, and it was the most unbelievable cute thing I've ever seen in my life. And bear in mind, I was really not okay with dogs, but this it was really sweet. And she would be digging these tiny holes in the garden and falling in them, and just kind of peeking out of this little hole in the garden. So I, for some reason, I agreed that we'd take her home, and I'd wrapped her up in this huge bundle of towels, and we took her home, and I then dropped her into the bath, still not touching her. Bear in mind, I still would not touch this creature. And then she went into the bath, and I sort of washed her down with the shower. And I looked at this lovely little thing, and she was just sopping wet. And I thought, I can work with this. I scooped her up again in huge towels. I still would not touch her. But then, of course, I somehow she knew that I was her owner, and she just kept coming to me. And I absolutely fell in love with her very, very quickly. Very quickly. It was like a switch.
That is an animal for you. Yeah, they give you so much love.
Yeah. She didn't care that she'd been dropped in the bath and sprayed with tons of, you know, shower and not been touched.
That's and all pure unconditional love. Eh?
It was pure. And I just, and bear in mind, she was about the size of the palm of my hand. She was really tiny, and she only grew to a few inches. She was a tiny weeny dog, and she suited the other dog. So that, you know, that was my dog phobia over and done with.
Excellent. So
yeah,
doesn't that happen to everyone? Okay, because you don't have to face your fears. Sometimes you just have to work on it first, and then you can meet the dog. But when the time is right, that is amazing. When the time is right, absolutely. And when you put the intention to it, I must say, for all the listeners, I am actually on Sharon's course, learning hypnotherapy, and yesterday I did a session online with a client of mine, and her dog came in and kept on barking. And I actually thought, you know what, let me just do a little bit on the dog first. So I actually sent some energy, talked to the dog, energetic-wise, through my computer, saying, it's okay to be calm, it's okay to be fine. And the dog was so relaxed that we didn't hear the dog until the end of the session.
Wow. So, it often happens.
Yeah.
And when I work with pregnant mums, and there was a lovely experience I had with a mother who came to me when she was pregnant. She was nervous of the birth itself, and so I worked with her for hypnosis for childbirth. And when she had the baby, everything was good. And then she came, phoned me up and said, Sharon, I want to have another session with you. And I said, oh, well, this is the time I've got. She said, oh, no, that's the time the baby's going to be awake. I said, don't worry, bring the baby. It's no problem. She goes, oh, no, it will be, you know, all over the place and it will be a mess. And she said, I don't want to interfere in my session. I said, bring the baby. You'll be absolutely fine. So she brought the baby and I started hypnotizing mum. And of course, the baby went straight into sound asleep because she'd already been programmed pre-birth.
You recognize your voice too. So
I recognized my voice, and that was it. She was out cold. So it happens mm-hmm. to animals, babies, you know, everybody that's in the vicinity of a hypnotic state does have some, definitely gets influenced, especially when I work with dentists and things. You know, I always say, I call it the witch's cauldron. Once you hypnotize the patient, everybody actually is involved in that hypnotic state.
Yeah, because everybody is hearing your voice too. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's hearing
surgery,
it.
Talking about surgery, you also had another fear, which is understandable. Mind sharing it to our listeners?
So, you know, that was, I was using hypnosis, not necessarily for the fear, actually. I was using hypnosis to overcome a spine surgery. And for my condition, I had a 50-50 chance of walking again after surgery. And there was, you know, I had gone in with such a strength, such a, you know, positive attitude in terms of using my mind to control the sensations of my body and how I would overcome the surgery. But one cannot know how any of these things are going to turn out. And so I had to work with the potential of never walking again. Plus, you know, how would that be in my life? And I think, you know, there's one thing that people often talk about is manifesting. You know, you should never think of the negative because if you think of the negative, that's going to come true. And I don't believe that, actually. I believe that you have to incorporate everything into your being. And you know, you're not in entire control of everything. And I think if you go into life thinking that you are, then there's going to be disappointment in many places along the way. So, and this is something I work with, even with the women for childbirth. You know, they want to have this natural birth. It wants to be, they want to have it in a very specific way and manner. And I say, well, let me teach you in case, or if there are other special allowances.
This is why when they ask you to write a birth plan and then forget about the birth plan, because this baby is going to decide how to come in the world. And
that's right. And you know,
control.
Exactly. So I always say to people, let me just guide you in how to maintain and manage your body and mind for any situation, not just a specific way that you believe that that's going to be your way. I think it's a great thing to put that intention out there. But I also think there's a reality that we need to work with, which is the unknown. And I think once you have control over your perceptions and the way you go with whatever might be happening, then of course, whatever happens, you recognize that you have real control. Otherwise, you're essentially out of control.
That's true.
So,
yeah. So you went to the surgery.
Yes. So I went with that in mind, knowing that there is the potential that I might not have. You know, with any spine surgery, that it's very precarious, and nobody really can tell which way things are going to go. You know. But I was very fortunate. Everything went smoothly. It went well, except that very shortly after the surgery, I sneezed and fell on the floor and needed a second surgery. So at that point, I had to go through the 50-50 again, which was worrying, because the 50-50 again was, can I actually manage this? You know, twice, you know, 50-50 seem, the odds, even though they're the same odds, seem very different.
But then you can think, okay, everything went well the first time, so there's no reason why it shouldn't have gone well the second time. But you did it. You did.
They went well enough, but of course there was some real instability, which is why it happened a second time. In fact, it happened a third time. And I am absolutely, you know, thrilled every day I can walk. You know, for me, it's quite miraculous that this has happened a number of times. So yeah, it's the fear of the damage and what might happen it still looms. And I think that's important to note with my clients when they go for any surgery. To accept that is part of the process, and the intensity of the fear will change.
That's true, because you already know.
Yeah.
Did you use hypnotherapy for the operation, or it was not possible?
So my surgeon wouldn't let me do this surgery with no anesthetic, and I felt that would have actually helped me. To do it without anesthetic, because I've had surgery on my mouth. I've had wisdom teeth taken out without anesthetic, and I've had the gum sliced into in different directions and had the tooth, you know, pulled from an impacted twisted tooth. And so I know what it feels like to have a surgery without any anesthetic. And I know that the recovery is so much faster, and the subconscious mind can cope with the body in a different way,
yeah,
in an
I
extraordinary
realize,
way.
You actually didn't you mentioned it in the video when you hypnotized the dog, that when the dog woke up, I didn't realize that when you don't have the anesthesia with the drug, you have less hemorrhage. There's less bleeding.
During the surgery, the surgeon cut I think it must have been a vein. I don't think it was an artery. But anyway, blood just shot out all over the poor and myself. There was blood everywhere. It was really. And so I thought, well, I've done this before. I tell my patients to stop bleeding. I've done it on myself to stop bleeding during surgery. So I actually just did exactly the same with the dog. I just said, stop the bleeding. And I kind of went and I, again, energetically held the dog. I touched the dog and gave a slight pressure to the dog at that moment to sort of give the intention of stop bleeding. The dog stopped bleeding. The surgeon looked at me and it was lovely. The surgeon was so sweet. He started singing, stop bleeding, stop bleeding, stop bleeding. And he's Turkish, and this was him singing in English, because it was such an emotional moment. He'd never seen anything like this. And I thought, wow, if it works on people, yeah, why does it not work on dogs?
Well, it's all energy. And
it was incredible. So during surgery, you can definitely do that. You can definitely tell somebody to, you know, stop bleeding. I did it not that long ago with a client. She's also on my YouTube channel. She had to have a bone graft in her mouth, and it was a major mouth surgery. And at one point she was bleeding quite a lot. So I turned to the surgeon and I said to him, does she need to stop bleeding? Because I know blood is really useful. It can wash a wound. So you want to have some bleeding for a moment. It's important. And so he said, well, yes. And he was just about to stitch her. And I said, wait. So I just turned around and said, stop the bleeding. and the bleeding absolutely stopped. And at that point, I mean, the doctor, that, you know, he's a dental surgeon. At that point, he was already fascinated by what was going on, by her stillness, her calmness, all this. But when that happened, I'll never forget the look in his face. He kind of turned to me and he looked at me. And at that moment, he said, "Is this magic?" And this was a very, you know, high-end, logical, scientific man, you know, and he was so absolutely blown away. And he was such a lovely chap. And he said after that, he said, "I've been in this business for over 40 years. I mean, bless him, he's retired recently. He said, "I've been in this business for over 40 years. And he said, "You have now shown me something I have never seen before." And he said, "And that takes some doing." And so, yeah, we had, it was beautiful. In fact, he was, his practice, he actually is at King Edward's Hospital, which is where the Queen uses, you know, the facilities there. So he's, you know, we're talking about a high end surgeon, not somebody who's kind of going, "Oh, this is fun." He was really serious about the work. And so he just said, "Yeah, in 40 years, I've never seen that before."
But
so,
energy is so powerful. And
it's really powerful. And I think, you know, one of the things about, you know, you mentioned about the hypnosis school and things like that. One of the things that, you know, I like to get across with hypnosis is fear is the one thing that can prevent you from going into the hypnotic state. The fear of...
Yeah, because... it's about control.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, okay, I let go. I don't have to control everything. I let go. I trust the hypnotherapist. I trust the process. And that is, and yes, fear can, in fact, once I've experienced hypnotherapy when I was, when I was a teenager, and I probably didn't want to go, and I just went, and I came out with a massive big headache because everything that the hypnotherapist said, I just didn't, the opposite. And that was my first experience, but since then I really enjoy it, and I enjoy the course that Sharon is doing. But it's exactly right. If you don't explain it, and if you don't know exactly what's going to happen, you have to prepare yourself, you have to know the process, and you have to trust the process, and that is part of it.
Trust the person that you're with, you know. Yeah. Have to create that rapport and the feeling that you're safe with the person in front of you. Yeah. I mean, it's no good if you've got you know, a young girl who's had a abuse with a man, and then she's put in a room on her own with a man, and
that would be not.
And then she's told to close her eyes hope for the best. It's
you really have to put the right context, and you have to listen to the person and put the right person with the right person. But when you mentioned the surgeon and how astonished and how shocked he was when he saw the power of energy, you just remind me of this morning I did a group session, and one lady was complaining about a headache, and she didn't put the camera on. So, but she gave me the permission to work on her energetic wise. So I worked on her, and from a level of 8, she went to level 5 and then level 3 within a few minutes. And the other people who on the group who was watching, it's like, seriously, really? And what I didn't know, it was quite funny actually, is that, and we all learn, is that because she didn't put the camera on, I didn't know she was driving. So the minute she said, "I'm driving," I said, "Okay, you didn't tell me that." Now I've learned that when the camera is not on, I should actually ask, "What are you doing at that time?" But I said, drive, just concentrate. But it was, she said, no, it's fine. I just stopped and it's fine. But it was really quite funny in a way. But
We all definitely learn with our, especially the online experience. I've learned a lot from online. I've started changing things.
Seeing the other people who did have the camera on and how they were watching the session, plus there was basically a black screen. They couldn't see. They could just see me talking and doing things and telling her what to do. It was, you know, they're like, "What does that? Is this really real?" And it's really nice to see how it's like an opening to tell people that actually there are certain things that can be done in a different way and can help other people. So
definitely. Yeah. And you know, this is just another tool that we all have it within us. We have the ability to change, we have the ability to move through processes and fears, But it's always about, as you said, the right time, the moment, the right context. You know, there has to be certain things that line up to make this happen. It's certainly not all to do with the practitioner that helps the person. Yeah. It really isn't.
It's the right time. There is one thing that you said on the course that I found that was very, useful, because hypnotherapy sometimes has the wrong connotation, because people seen on TV or stage hypnotherapy and the control that people can have over you. But you actually said it. And every day we go into in and out hypno. I'll let you explain it the way you explained it on the course, but about driving.
So I'll just explain it quickly, and so that your listeners can understand what we're talking about when we talk about hypnotherapy, or the hypnotic state per se. The hypnotic state is a state that all of us have encountered within our day-to-day life, not even our, once or twice in our life. It's in our day-to-day momentary life. Now, you could start saying, well, the daydream state is alluding to that hypnotic state. It's not quite that, but if you think of in the context of driving, when you're driving in a car and you get from A to B and you can't really remember how you got there, but you're driving perfectly safely, and perhaps there was even kids in the back of the car screaming, or you had a conversation on the phone or listening to the radio, whatever it might have been, you may have had two or three things going on in that moment, but your driving was efficient and effective. In fact, your eyesight is 6 times clearer, your hearing is 6 times sharper, and your reactions are 6 times faster. So your ability to drive when you're in that state is a much more effective drive. Now, if you think back to the time when you were learning to drive.
Yeah, I was going to say that. The first time you go in,
or even the second, third and fourth, and maybe the 20th, maybe the 30th time, it's not an immediate thing. No. That you don't fall into this subconscious state. But when most people go, oh, but Sharon, you're just talking about automatic pilot. Yes, I'm talking about an automatic state of mind, which is so frequent to us that is the state of mind that is, if you wanted to know what hypnosis feels like, that's what it feels like. Now, when you're consciously driving as a new driver, of course, that's when you're kind of looking around. Am I in the right place? Am I doing the right thing? Am I on the right side of the road?
How can I do so many things at the same time? People don't speak in the car, don't talk, don't move.
Don't talk to me, don't look at me, don't open a window, don't turn this off, you're constantly, I'm a new driver now in the States. I'm a brand new driver. So I've gone through this process myself very recently. So I'm watching myself moving from conscious minded to subconscious driving. It's a wonderful process to even watch oneself go through as an adult, because I hadn't driven since I passed my test at 17, and then I had a car at 18 and then gave it up by 19. That was it. So, and I never drove again.
And in the UK, we're on the other side.
That was in the UK, and now I'm in the States. And even things that you take for granted, you think, well, it's only the other side of the road, it can't be that different. Actually, it's our habitual state of how we even look at signposts.
Because I can tell you, because I've learned driving in France, and then I moved to UK, and then I was thinking, oh, coming off the exit on the motorway is on the other side.
Simple things. And I hate to say it, there are times, because I am a new driver, I still look the wrong way, left and right, right and left, or which way am I got to look before coming?
Even crossing the road. And this is why when you go to London, when you go actually in the center of London, on the ground, on the floor, it actually says look left, look right, because you're so into I never thought about that, but yeah, hypno state. That
you're in that hypnotic auto state. And you know what? My husband, when he comes to the UK and he sees it on the ground, he actually always says it out loud. He loves it. He loves the fact that we have that written down on the pavement. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's a wise thing to do, because we have so many people from different countries that don't know which way they're looking. Well, you just, the first thing you always do before you step off a pavement is you look down automatically to see how far your step is. Well, you've got this huge bold writing to tell you exactly what to do. So yeah, I do see that this comes into play, and it is what's familiar to you. Living in the UK for all my life and then coming to the States to drive, the format of the road is just unfamiliar. So that's
it's big, and you've got big spaces.
Very big spaces. The lights are in different places. The turnings are in weird places. The layout of the road, the stop signs, there's not enough roundabouts. You know, there's things that I'm sort of like questioning. Why?
And then when you come back to the UK, it's like, oh, the road is so small. Do I actually fit in that tiny little road?
Right. Well, I haven't yet. You know what? I haven't yet driven in the UK. So that would be another mastery to do. But that's the hypnotic state. And what's interesting about that state of mind, so people can get the understanding of it, is when you've driven from A to B and you can't remember how you got there, it's only when you get out the car and you slam the door do you kind of awaken from that state. And you see yourself, it's like, oh, I've just driven over, say, Hammersmith flyover, and that could have been really dangerous, but it wasn't. And you suddenly can recall some of the big kind of junctions and things that were going on, and people had stepped out in the middle of the road and you managed everything. But one of the things that you do is you slam that door and then you don't care, because it's all done, dusted and gone. That's another interesting fact about hypnosis, is when you've been in the hypnotic state, there's a sense of not worrying. The let go of worry is, I just don't care, I'm okay. And if you're in the hypnotic state during surgery, there is that real sense of, oh, I'm absolutely fine, I just don't care.
Yeah, so, you let go of the control. You're just like,
you okay, absolutely,
I'm in a safe place, therefore I can just let it go and let the person do whatever they have to do.
It's the hypnotic state is a really special place, but we're so familiar with it, we don't realize. And watching a movie is the same thing, reading a book, dancing, playing tennis. We have to go into those states of mind. And the more we go into those states of mind, the healthier we become, because we're now working with what emerges, and we can respond very quickly to what is emerging without having fear around us to what is emerging.
How did you get into hypnotherapy? Because it's fascinating.
It's a good question. It's probably not the answer that people would think of, or even think, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. I had never been to a hypnotherapist. In fact, I had never had one-to-one therapy in my life before being a hypnotherapist. What I had done for about 15 or so years prior to this, so since my very early 20s, I had been doing a lot of self-development workshops. I was fascinated by our ability to change and move through issues. I really loved group work. I thought that, you know, the dynamics were incredible, and just human nature was of real interest to me, how we develop. And I noticed through my own, you know, upbringing and issues that I carried, how I managed to change and shift some of my own belief systems through some of these workshops, and just through other people and connections. And I thought that was really interesting. But what really got me was I never really changed. I never really, you know, these would be momentary or a month long change or a week change after a workshop. I'd be on a high as a kite, and then I would try my best to put something into practice. But from a subconscious level, which is something I didn't understand or didn't know at the time, I never actually had a real consistent permanent change. And I thought, well, these people are constantly going to these workshops, and we're all in the same boat, and we keep going and going and going to get something. But what are we actually trying to get? Now, I still believe and love workshops. Don't get me wrong. I feel that doing group work is hugely satisfying, and it's a process that many of us would enjoy and grow from. That is not the issue here. This is about having a specific kind of permanent change over certain issues. And it was of interest to me, let's put it that way.
End of year resolution, and then you make a list. Yes. And you start, and then January you do it, first week, second week, third week, and then fourth week, and then February comes along, and then everything goes,
everything's gone, and it's not permanent. And then there's a feeling of sadness and frustration and all these other things. And then another year I've done it again, and I'm, you know, whatever. So in terms of how I got interested in hypnotherapy, I was actually at the time living in Israel, and I was going to, you know, make that potentially my permanent home. And I still was sort of humming and hawing about it. I wasn't sure. And I was back in the UK, and I thought, well, I don't really have a job there. I want to write a list of all the things I love in life. And maybe then I can write this list and find my real niche when I get there. And so I won't feel so almost isolated, because I wasn't doing anything particularly there. I'd been doing groups. I'd been teaching groups of self-development already. I'd been teaching art. I was an artist originally. So I was teaching, you know, art meditation and that kind of thing. And so everything made sense to me in terms of those kind of things, but it wasn't a career per se. And then one day I thought, well, what do I really want to do in life? And I wrote this list very quickly. So what that would be, what we've now call automatic writing, where you just sit and you just let your subconscious just write down whatever comes to mind first thing. And I do this with a lot of clients who are in limbo state, who don't know what careers to follow. And it's a really interesting process. So I looked at this list, and on my list had artist, of course, because that's what I knew, animator, because that's where I've had my degree in animation. Again, I wasn't that interested in it. I wanted to be a potter. I was doing that for fun. So there's a lot of art-based things, because for me, that was something I knew and it was familiar and I loved. I also wanted to be a chef in space. That was on my list. And the other thing was, you know, I'd written hypnotherapist. And it was part of the list. It was just one of the many kind of crazy ideas I had. And I looked at it and I thought, why would I have written that? Where did it come from? What on earth came out of that? Why would that even be on my list? You know, I could even understand chef in space, but I couldn't understand a hypnotherapist because that just actually was a thing. So I thought, well, I'm going to look this up. I'm going to go on the internet and find out what is a hypnotherapist. At that time, the internet was quite young, and the people that were hypnotherapists had, oh, it was crazy. I wish we could still see some of these websites today. You know, there was just circles going round and round. You are now hypnotized. I'm your hypnotist and things like that. And I thought, gosh, this is really odd. And, you know, people's websites were just very unusual. But I continued to look, and I thought, well, who trained these people? And I created a kind of pyramid effect of who trained the trainers. And that's who I was interested in. Who was the trainer of all trainers?
Yeah, I always do that.
And I came across a gentleman called Gil Boyne, who was in the USA in California, Glendale, California. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to phone him up. So I phoned up this man, and he said, hello, dear, I'm 82 years old and I no longer train. And I said, well, I'm prepared to come and I'll come to California. I was quite delighted to come, the idea to come here, but I'm not doing it, dear. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, you're in London. I said, yes, I am. And he said, well, why don't you come and work with somebody who knows my work better than me? And I thought, well, if he's going to say that about one particular person that he's trained, I'm
definitely.
So I phoned up who was then to be my teacher, and I phoned him up and I said, I'm interested in coming on your training. And at the time, he was new to training. It was his first few, you know, he'd only done a couple, I think, and maybe even just one prior to me. I was on his second training, and he said, oh, yes, when do you want to do it? And I thought, oh, I've got to choose the date. I mean, it was that new. It hadn't really been put out. I said, well, I'm free this date and free these dates. And so he said, all right, I'll put the training on. And, you know, with just me in mind, this wonderful chap, Dr. John Butler, created that particular training. Now, there was on my first week of training, there was about six of us. The second level, there was a few more. There must have been about 10 or 12 of us. So some had come from the previous trainings. And it was just, you know, this, I have to say, even after I came out of that training, I still didn't really understand what hypnotherapy was. I still didn't quite get it. Because, again, I was in that sort of realm of, well, what do you do with this? And it didn't matter. He's an amazing teacher, but my understanding was, I don't really understand what I'm doing. So
you did really well now, and you're running trainings.
and I'm running trainings. And just you know, as much as I can, you know, I do, you know, I hope to give credit to John Butler and his methods of training. And, you know, as much as I can do as good or as well, or even to a standard like his, you know, that he could be proud of, that's what I want to be able to do. Excellent. Because he is, of all the trainers, he really is extraordinary.
Yeah, I have watched videos about it is impressive. Sharon, where can our listeners find you if they want to get in touch with you?
So if they wanted private work with me, the best way is my email, which is sharon@mindbeing.com. That's mind and being, human being, so that's easy to remember, mindbeing.com. and if they want to train, I mean, I you know, this is my passion, I love training people. It's at academyforhypnosis.com. Okay. And join us all. One of the things that I've created with the, as you know, Lauren, is with the students, my ambition is to keep everybody from all trainings connected, which I think is important, because then it creates a vaster ground for everybody to practice. But also, you know, you're given more choices of who you work with and you know, things like that. So I've created it. If you are already a hypnotherapist or NLP practitioner, you can actually come on for a discounted rate.
Thank you very much, Sharon. Thank you very much for joining us today and talking.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you for the opportunity.
This is Lauren Rosenberg, Fear Buster. Looking forward to next week talking about another fear. Have a good week. Bye.